OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bald spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now then, you're very welcome back. So as mentioned before the ad break, we are joined by John O'Mahony, a Fine Gael's Shannon spokesperson for sport, obviously an All-Ireland winning manager with Galway as well. We have Professor Anthony Staines. He's the chair in health systems research at DCU. And we have Professor Kingston Mills too, who heads up the Centre for Study of Immunology at Trinity's Biomedical Sciences Institute. And I might start with you, Kingston. It has been a positive week when we look at the numbers. You might just firstly establish where we are as we begin to navigate a way out of this now, particularly with sport in the context of our conversation. Far from perfect, I'm sure, not least in nursing homes, but certainly the health service wasn't overrun. The numbers are down. There is a sense we have come through the initial onslaught anyway.
Good afternoon. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in getting sport back in action. I'm an ex-runner. I was an international marathon runner a number of years ago. So I'm a keen rugby supporter these days. So I'm very keen to see rugby and all the other sports back in action. So to answer your question where we are, I think, you know, the numbers in the last few days have been extremely encouraging. Obviously, the pandemic is declining. But we're under lockdown measures at the moment, which are, you know, keeping the numbers down. And, you know, when those measures are relaxed a bit more, if the numbers still go down, I'll be, you know, confident that things will be a lot better in a few weeks or a month. But that is very much dependent on the public adhering to the guidelines that have been issued by government and the department in relation to social isolation. And also for testing, we need to make sure that we keep on top of the testing and find any cases that do prop up in the community, that they're tested and the people that come in contact with them are tested and isolated. So I think it's positive news in the last few days, how it put it.
Yes, I didn't give you your full title because your other ones are quite long anyway, but you are also national marathon champion 1986 and you have a time of 2:13:55 under your belt. So rest assured, we knew your credentials.
Thank you. I just wanted to get that in there early, you know. So people knew I wasn't commentating on sport without, you know, a vested interest, so to speak. So I'm very keen to see sport back in action. And I think that, you know, there are lots of sports like running, cycling, rowing, tennis, golf, which, there's no issue in my view with these sports in terms of being very soon back to activity, certainly the training level, but also, you know, in some of those individual sports at the competition level. So I'm very keen to see that. And I think there are also measures that can be put in place to get other sports. We've seen what's happened in Germany with the Bundesliga back in action, even though it's behind closed doors. They're testing all their players. It's working, it seems to be. I don't see why rugby here, for example, it's a professional game. They can afford to pay for their testing. I think that they should be planning. I'm sure they are. And we know that in August, they have plans to get the Pro 14 and the Heineken Cup back in action. So I'd be very delighted if that happens. I think that, you know, with professional sport, it's obviously easier because they can pay for the cost of testing. I think it's more difficult than something like GAA and the amateur game where, you know, the numbers are so huge, it would be impossible.
Let's focus on GAA for a moment then. John O'Mahony on the line with us as well. John, just to remind people of the roadmap out of this from a sporting perspective, phase two comes into effect on the 8th of June, which does permit outdoor sporting activities, including small group team sports training, not matches, but training, once there is no contact. So that's on the 8th of June. 29th of June allows behind closed doors sporting activities, and then phase four, 20th of July, that allows for team leagues to restart, GAA soccer, obviously with limitations on spectators. There are grumblings, I would suspect, John, and you're hearing them as well, and I think you voiced a few amongst the GAA community. The GAA from the off here have been very, very cautious, and now in the last while the numbers have improved. Am I right in saying that you're looking at the pitches all around the country? Now it seems they will open as walkways, but you'd like the pitches to open as well. You would like people, the public, to be there, go and have a puck of a ball and a kick of a football on the GAA pitches, pretty much, I would suspect, from the 8th of June. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm not talking about collective training or anything else. And I think, as you said there, I think the GAA, and that would be the sporting organization that I would be most familiar with. But I mean, in recent days, I've walked past my local golf club and my tennis club, and I see them carefully and, you know, within the rules, pucking about and playing a few people playing golf as well. So I think, you know, for the bigger steps, which are down the line of it, as they mentioned there about the rugby competitions and Gaelic competitions and club competitions, but to take those bigger steps, you need to take the baby steps. And I think, you know, the government roadmap allowed for, if you like, four people to go into an open area. And what we are talking about here, we've heard a lot about businesses and the restrictions that would be on them, but that doesn't apply to a lot of the team sporting organizations because they have huge spaces. And nowadays, I think that, you know, the GAA has the biggest infrastructure in every parish and area around the country, with three and four pitches in lots of cases. And I think that is just, particularly, if you like, if you think of it, the biggest drop-off, if you like, in people partaking in all team sports, but Gaelic Games, as I said, is between 17 and 21. Now, they're just, after having all this issue with the leaving cert and the junior cert, third-level exams have been done online. They won't be, you know, a lot of the third-level students won't be travelling abroad this summer. So I think there's a need here to allow, if you like, because the government are allowing it, three and four people to, you know, could be 20, 30 yards apart, dry, you know, going to their local pitch, and, you know, they can do this into the local park.
John, John, sorry, just interrupt there. I take the point, right? So the GAA, we invited them on, they're not willing to come on just at the moment. The worry might be you open up the pitches. Who's there to police it? Was the point John Horan made a while back? Like if you have a hundred kids flocking there, yeah, and you know, yeah, yourself, yeah, after half an hour, sure, an impromptu match has broken out. I'm not saying it's difficult, and people generally have been pretty good. But equally, you do open up all those pitches. Nobody can guarantee that everyone's going to adhere to everything brilliantly.
Yes, and that's a very relevant point, and I take that very much so. But like, the reality is, in the last 10 weeks. There's an army of GAA volunteers helping older people by bringing their shopping and going to the chemist shop and so on. Like, the volunteers that are there, not only have we the best facility infrastructure, but we have the best, if you like, human army of infrastructure as well. These young people that I'm talking about in particular, they're not at school at the minute. They're not working because there's a lockdown, and I just feel that I would support the way that the GAA have acted totally up to now, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's just a general point of taking the baby step, if you like. I was delighted to hear, for instance, Tom Ryan this evening saying that their tentative plans is that cold camps will go ahead. That would be brilliant because, you know, I was concerned that might fall along with a whole lot of the other things. So I think it's just that an easy solution is just to keep everything locked up until, you know, the new year. But that isn't the you have to balance the risk with the need, and the need, particularly, I would say, for the mental health of young people. The lift young people would get by just getting on to have a kickabout in their own club pitch at the moment, I think would be enormous.
Okay, John, I'll bring in Professor Anthony Staines, who's been waiting. Anthony, you can come in on any or all of that.
Surely. I'm feeling in most distinguished company because my sporting activities are limited to my cricket team winning the House Cup when I was about 16. And I was invariably the last batsman to be chosen. So I do not have a distinguished sports track record. I tell you where my head is at with this. We've had a very serious lockdown, which was really an emergency response to a major outbreak, and has largely done what it said in the tin. And we're now trying to move back to something resembling normal. And there's a very active discussion as to whether we should move back to a place where this virus is still circulating in our community, which will have big impacts on sports for the certainly next couple of years, possibly longer, or whether we should try and get rid of it over the course of the summer. And some of us think we should try the latter. So the implications of that for everybody are that we move at a slow but steady pace from where we are now. And we look at all the things we're planning to do. We say, what is the risk? The risks in sport are very simple. You get this virus from prolonged exposure in confined spaces with poor ventilation. They're the really high risks. So we saw in South Korea about 3 weeks ago, there was an outbreak in a nightclub, which I think has been brought under control. But there's 240 cases. They tested 83,000 people to achieve that. And that's the kind of model of where this disease spreads like wildfire. Yeah. Where it doesn't spread is kids kicking a ball around on the pitch.
Right.
In a GAA setting, you're talking about the bar, you're talking about the changing rooms. Rugby is a real problem because close personal contact is a central part of rugby. If you've got a ruck or a mole or a scrum, that's a great environment for transmitting virus.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of very practical risks to be assessed sport by sport by sport.
Okay.
But if you start at where those risks might be, kids on playing fields must be well down the list of risks.
Okay, interesting. So Kingston, for instance, it seems the cool camps, the GAA cool camps, are going to go ahead. So that's about 150,000 kids from the ages of 6 through to 13. And this is run by the county boards. And the hope is that they will continue. That, in your mind, is very viable. The information around kids has changed dramatically over the past couple of months. Where are we now on kids?
Okay, so you know, children can get infected, but the numbers are considerably smaller that actually get infected compared with adults, and the numbers that actually get serious illness are also very low. Some children with underlying medical conditions like asthma would be, they would be high risk for getting COVID-19. So I would suggest that any child with asthma should not be involved with this for a start. But in children, the risks of transmission are also low because they don't, because the virus doesn't replicate a lot in a child. It's a very mild disease, so their chances of passing it on are much less than for an adult. The real risk around the children playing games and sport are really to do with the adults that are accompanying them more than the children themselves. So if the adults do the appropriate social isolation procedures and do all that, perhaps, you know, I haven't looked into this from the GAA perspective, but I presume they're suggesting that they don't change in the changing rooms and they all come with their kit on and go out and play. If they do that, the risks are much less. It's really congregating indoors. Outdoors is not as big an issue. And coming back to what Anthony said about the rugby, I mean, my point about the rugby is very clear. There is no risk, in my view, of playing rugby, even a scrum, if everybody is tested appropriately. You test the players every week. This is a professional sport. Sure. It can be done. And I see no reason why rugby can't put in place procedures for testing all their players. This, I'm talking now about the professional game.
Yeah. What here. About at amateur level, Kingston, around the country?
It's more tricky at amateur level. I mean, I think that the amateur level is the same as for the GAA. There you probably have to be a little bit more cautious in terms of bringing back the game. But certainly professional level, I don't see why they can't put in place very good plans that will satisfy everybody, that players are not going to be at risk. With the amateur game, it is more tricky because it's not that it's not that expensive to do testing, but it is going to be beyond the reach of the club team down the country or in the city where they don't have huge resources. So it's not going to be practical to do testing for every amateur club in the country. So really then we're waiting. The other thing that should be said and hasn't been said yet, and I don't know whether Anthony would agree with me or not on this, you know, we're in a situation now where the numbers of cases and the numbers of deaths from COVID has significantly declined in the last few days and week or so. And I have no reason to suspect that it won't continue to decline. So supposing we get to a situation where we have very little or no cases in Ireland, like this, and this did happen. I mean, you know, other countries like China, Taiwan, Singapore, New Zealand are back playing rugby because they have no COVID-19. And if we get to a situation like that, I don't see any reason why we can't be playing all our sports again within a shorter period of time, even than it's been predicted right now, if we get rid of the virus and don't re-import it again from another country. And I've been, you know, vocal about this in the media about not allowing flights to come in without quarantining the people who come back, especially from countries where they have not yet got rid of the virus. So once European countries, so supposing Italy and China, or Italy and France and are COVID-free and Ireland is, I don't see a reason why you couldn't have a rugby match between a team from those two countries that wouldn't be a huge risk.
Okay, because I was going to ask about that, Anthony. Say in due course, and John, I do want to come back to the GAA Championship in a moment, and I'll do that, but seeing as we've brought up travel and rugby, for instance. Anthony, come November time, Ireland have a Six Nations game potentially in Paris. Italy are due to come to Dublin. Saracens, the English club, are due to play Leinster in November potentially. There's Japan, Australia, South Africa coming to Dublin. Quarantining isn't possible to fulfill all those fixtures. In those limited instances, can sports teams, professional ones certainly, can they bypass quarantine if we have extra testing?
If we can organise things so we have no circulating virus in Ireland by September, October time, which I think we can do, so we're back more or less to normal, we can put our resources into things like that.
Okay.
We look at the risk of each event. We look at who's coming from where. We look at how much virus there is and where they're coming from. And we make a plan for that event. I don't see 5,000 Italian fans coming. But bringing over, I don't know how many people there would be, maybe 25, 30.
Yeah.
I don't see that can't be managed. It has to be planned. But it depends on us having no cases or very few cases. Because that gives us the spare resources to actually handle something like that.
Yeah.
That's another reason for my point of view, going to zero.
Yeah, because as we're progressing, Anthony, and I do take your point that you're saying we should crush this thing and get it down to zero, but we're progressing as we are. Is a second surge, to some degree or other, inevitable?
A second surge is very likely and will be, if it happens, will be very expensive. Because a lot of people have struggled through the first surge, kept their business going, maybe with great difficulty. Will they make a second surge? I don't know.
Yeah.
Will they get through a second wave or a third wave or a fourth wave? Because this could go on. Our estimate right now is 5% of the population have been infected. We don't have good figures. There's a study starting shortly to answer that exact question. But the guess would be about 5%. Leaves 95% of us at risk of this disease.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would say, just taking on something Kingston said, there's some very recent German data that says that while kids don't get this disease, the amount of virus they have is not greatly different to the amount adults have. So I'd be quite worried that in September, when kids go back to school, if we still have virus circulating, that really could trigger a very major bounce.
Okay.
So I think we have to be careful.
Yeah. John, on the point of the championship and what happens, say, post-July or certainly August 10th, if we're being very cautious from a GAA point of view, when all restrictions, including rugby and wrestling, are lifted. John Horan said, John, on the Sunday game a couple of weeks back, and admittedly it was a very different climate then, but he did say of a GAA championship, he said, I can't see it happening. If social distancing is a priority to deal with this pandemic, I don't know how we can play a contact sport. And that's what Gaelic Games is. It's a contact sport. I mean, social distancing is going to be in place, John, for potentially years. That is the reality of where we are. So do you suspect that the GAA will have to soften on that, that we can't go a year, potentially 2 years, without championship action?
Well, yes, I mean, just before I answer that question, just to finish, I think listening to Anthony and Kingston there and myself, I think there's a lot of common ground here. You know, I think, as I said, we need to take baby steps until we take the steps that you're talking about there, about going back into competition. And I do agree that the key point from John Horne's interview was the social distancing. But I mean, like, I think Eamon Sweeney referred to it a few weeks ago, or a couple of weeks ago, in a piece where he said that, you know, from a GAA perspective, you know, if the Bundesliga is back, if the Premiership is back, if tennis and rugby, as Kingston I think has mentioned, that it's possible that because it's a professional sport and testing and all that, then, you know, the GAA may be on the high moral ground, but we'll be on our own on the high moral ground. So, but there is a debate. Obviously, the caution has to be taken, but I think if you're waiting for the social distancing to be resolved, now it's interesting that it's in the political and health debate as we speak to bring it down from 2 to 1. So obviously, one wouldn't solve it either for the sport or for the GAA. But I think that there will have to be compromise. As I said at the beginning, I think this is all about a balancing the risk factor without causing second surges or anything else and doing it cautiously. But I think you have to take on the challenge of getting back to some sense of normality by doing the baby steps first. And I think that if we're going to have any competition this year, you know, those issues are going to have to be revisited.
Kingston, you talked about the professional bubble, and so within a professional bubble they can test and they can effectively quarantine. From a GAA perspective, and John Horne and the GAA have urged caution on every step of this, I think quite rightly, and people have approved, and they have said they don't want any lives lost as a result of playing an amateur game. What state would the country need to be in come September or October, Kingston, for amateur GAA players to be given the thumbs up, considering some of them may work in hospitals, nursing homes, who knows where else? Like, how viable is a GAA championship with amateur inter-county players?
Well, I think the GAA are right in being prudent about not rushing things and, you know, contributing to a sort of a second surge if that happens. But, you know, I think, as I said earlier, if the numbers are down to, you know, no new cases in Ireland, and that's not that unlikely,
right?
Then I, there's no reason why GAA and all other sports can't resume. And I don't agree with the comments that we need to social isolate for years. That's over the top in my view. If we have I know Anthony's an epidemiologist, and this is not my area. But you know, if the disease doesn't return in a second wave, and there are lots of situations where that's happened, you know, where diseases have come and they've gone. Mm. And if that happens with COVID-19, then I don't think we need to be social isolating for 2 or 3 years. I don't think we need not be playing sport until the end of the year. I think we have to be a bit more optimistic about it than that. I mean, I've been very, you know, vocal in the media about, you know, we need to have measures to curtail the virus, and I stand over those comments. But I equally believe that if we have put in place the measures to eliminate it and done so, well, then, you know, we need to pick the appropriate steps to get back to some sort of normality.
Okay, well, that's a positive note. Anthony, on the issue of crowds, over the last 48 hours or so, people have talked about how shouting and confined spaces and one of the key ways to spread this. And even I saw footage last night of, even if you're wearing a mask, droplets can still come out either side of the mask as opposed to in front of your face. So in terms of crowds coming back into stadiums, give us your thoughts on that and when that's likely, or where we need to be even for that to be likely.
I think we need to be at no cases in Ireland.
Okay.
We get to that by really intense tracking and tracing, as Kingston says. Wearing masks is going to be really important. And they've brought in a quarantine for people coming in. And Kingston will know more about this, but there's likely to be fast testing coming, which will make that much easier to manage.
Yeah.
But I don't see us going back to 80,000 in Croke Park. And I've been there, and it's amazing. Sensation. But I don't see us going back to that for some little time. It doesn't mean we can't play.
Yes. So I was going to ask you, actually, it's impossible. I was going to say, could you see full stadiums sometime next year? But at this point, is it impossible to even hazard a guess?
No. If we bring it down to zero, if we can crush the curve, all our odds are better. But to do that, that's going to happen by accident. You know, the way we're going at the moment, which is we've made great progress, the numbers will go down, as Kingston says. But if we want them to go down to zero and stay down, we have to plan that. And that means masks, tracking and tracing, quarantine, and looking at every step of what we're doing as we go along.
Mm. Kingston, do you want to come in on crowds at matches? Because for a lot of sports, that's the lifeblood in terms of revenue.
Sure it is. I mean, and you know, as a spectator myself these days, I mean, absolutely adore watching matches live rather than on the television. I mean, television is a good second best, but live sport is just unbelievable. So, you know, I would dearly miss it, and I'm dearly missing live sport. So I really want to see it happening. But, you know, a very good second best is watching it on TV. And then the other option, of course, is to have some sort of situation where you will have it is possible to do some social isolation and, for example, allow in 10% of the normal crowd. So 5,000 people in the Aviva, which, you know, is manageable. Every second seat and every second row would be empty or more, you know, where you would begin to start to have some crowd there where, you know, for the players, it just makes it so much of a better game if you can have even a few spectators there. So I think, you know, while 80,000 in Croke Park is a lot of people, I think there are sort of steps one could take in that direction and that would be, you know, allow some spectators in under very strict conditions. And I think wearing masks, I agree with Anthony on this, and there's been prevaricating on this by our government, I have to say. You know, they haven't come out yet and said yes, you must wear masks. But it's an obvious thing to do, in my view. You know, you spread the virus by coughing and sneezing. I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the spectators and the other you know, the coaches and stuff. They should be wearing masks. I mean, we should all be wearing masks when we're going to the shop and in businesses where people are coming in close contact. It's not a big deal to have to wear a mask, and if done properly, it does stop the transmission of the virus.
John, I've literally 30-20 seconds, but to round this up, it sounds, listening to Anthony and to Kingston, like kids and kicking a ball around a GA pitch is something maybe we could look to accelerate.
Yes, I think that would be my initial request, if you like. But just as regards the crowds and the pitches, I think that I'm told that Croke Park could hold between 15 and 20,000 people with social distancing. So maybe you're going to have a lot of provincial finals or something if there is eventually a knockout competition that could be played in Croke Park. And how about an All-Ireland final on St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, well, hopefully things continue to go well. My thanks to John O'Mahony of Fine Gael. He's their Shannon spokesperson on sport, All-Ireland winning manager as well. Professor Anthony Staines, chair in health systems research at DCU and a fine cricketer in his day. And we had Professor Kingston Mills, who heads up the Centre for Study of Immunology at Trinity's Biomedical Sciences Institute and was a national marathon champion in Ireland back in 1986. Gents, thanks all. Much appreciated. Back in one moment.
The OTB Podcast Network.